Good morning and welcome to the Second Court of Appeals. We apologize for our delay this morning. We have reached Mr. Barella, and he is not planning on being here for oral argument. So we will proceed with Mr. Barton and let him argue his case, and then we will go on to the next case, the sixth case on our docket. First, I would like to welcome, I understand, Judge Brent Carr's interns are here. We welcome you today and hope you enjoy our session, although it's going to be a little unique, only having one side doing battle. But I'm sure it will be good. Anyways, the first case is Sandra Parker versus Robert Glasgow, PC. And Mr. Barton, if you'll proceed.
Thank you. May it please the court. I will try to keep my remarks brief. But I do want to point out to the court that Ms. Parker complains about the amount that she agreed to accept at a mediation. She knew that she did not have to settle, but she wanted to. She also knew that she could proceed with the lawsuit with discovery and experts, and that nothing that Mr. Glasgow did prevented her or affected her ability to prepare for trial, go to trial, and obtain the best possible result that she could have had. She also knew that it would be more expensive to do that than to settle. And she knew that the tax appraisal values were negotiable and not binding. And with all of that knowledge, she voluntarily decided to accept approximately $1 million and other benefits to settle the case. And she signed the mediated settlement agreement. She later testified to the divorce court and signed a decree that represented that the settlement amount was fair and equitable and just. She now takes the inconsistent position that the settlement amount was not fair and equitable and just, and that she was entitled to more money at mediation. The evidence conclusively proves that she voluntarily agreed to settle, and she received all of the benefits from the settlement, and quasi-estoppel and public policy prevent her from attempting to later sue the lawyer because she later decided that the settlement amount was too low. And she says that there are four facts that preclude summary judgment as to whether she voluntarily settled. And I'd like to just focus on those for a minute to show that they do not preclude summary judgment. The heart of her argument is that the statement in her affidavit that she found out well over a year later that, quote, some of the properties were worth more than the appraisal value. That's just an unsubstantiated conclusion. There's no facts. She doesn't identify what properties she's talking about, how many properties, what the conditions, the market conditions were. She doesn't identify who she supposedly learned it from. The sales price from a piece of property a year and a half after a mediation in and of itself is no evidence of what the property was worth at the mediation. And here, we don't even have any evidence of even what the sales price was. It's just a bald conclusion. It doesn't preclude summary judgment. She complained secondly about the lack of discovery and sworn statements, but she knew that at the time of the mediation, and she testified that she voluntarily made the decision of her own free will to settle the case. Thirdly, she complains there were no expert appraisals, but she knew that at the mediation and still voluntarily settled. So that just leaves us with her statement in the affidavit where she says that Mr. Glasgow told her at mediation that the trial court would divide the real estate based on tax appraisals instead of market value. And that statement is just so conclusory and nonsensical that it can't raise a fact issue. There are no facts in the affidavit about the actual conversation, what she actually asked, what Mr. Glasgow actually said. There's no evidence about the context. Was the context, well, what might happen if we don't have experts or any other evidence of value? We don't know if that's the context because her affidavit is devoid of any substantiating facts. It's just a conclusion. And the statement on its face can't raise a fact issue because no reasonable juror could believe it in light of the undisputed facts. She admits that she and Mr. Glasgow talked about hiring experts leading up to the mediation. The day after the mediation was scheduled, they had a conversation about that. The law firm contacted two expert-type valuation firms. Ms. Parker admits that she didn't have the money to hire experts. She says Mr. Glasgow told her it would be too expensive and she wouldn't get a return on her investment, obviously, because it was going to meet mediation in a couple days and it might settle. And she admits that she knew she could proceed with discovery and hiring experts if it didn't settle. If Mr. Glasgow had said and thought that the trial court would only use tax appraisal values, none of those undisputed facts would have happened because it wouldn't have been necessary. She admits that she knew that the tax appraisal values were not binding. She herself negotiated to increase the value of one of the properties by about $100,000. That undisputed fact just flies in the face of this conclusory statement in her affidavit. She testified the mediator said that they were working off of tax appraisal values because that's what was available. Well, there wouldn't have been any need for him to have said that. It just is nonsensical. The court credits evidence favorable to a non-movement if reasonable jurors could, and disregards contrary evidence unless reasonable jurors could not. And the court does not credit unreasonable inferences. Here, reasonable jurors could not disregard all of these undisputed facts. And it's in light of that, the conclusory statement that Mr. Glasgow said that the trial court would only use tax values, that's just improbable. It's nonsensical. It is as improbable as if he had said, or that she said, that Mr. Glasgow told her there were 27 hours in a day or 600 days in a year. No reasonable juror could believe that. And that's a question of law for the court, just like any other conclusory statement is a question of law. There are no fact issues. The decision to accept an amount in settlement is the client's. The client may ask the lawyer what his or her opinion is, what he or she thinks, but the decision is the client's. On that day, Ms. Parker knew what the numbers were. She knew what they were based on. She knew they were negotiable, and she knew that she didn't have to settle and could proceed with discovery. That is a voluntary decision. She's complaining that she shouldn't have been bound by the tax appraisal values. She wasn't. She knew it, and she did it. Those are the undisputed facts. Real estate values either go up or they go down. We wouldn't be here if she thought the values had gone down. But to say that a client can sue the lawyer because of the value of a piece of property in a settlement goes up at some point in the future
But isn't her malpractice claim really based on her assertion that it's not that tax values were necessarily used by any of the parties, but that her lawyer failed to make it clear to her that they could have done something else? They could have brought in experts or different appraisals.
That is part of what she claims. But it doesn't negate the fact that she knew that. She knew they had talked about experts. She knew they hadn't hired experts. She knew that she didn't have to settle. The mediator, she admitted that the mediator said repeatedly at mediation, if you have any questions, if you don't like this, you don't have to settle. She knew that she didn't have to do that, and that they could gear up for trial the next day. And there was nothing that had been done that would have affected her ability to proceed to trial and get what she could get at trial. But she voluntarily, with knowledge that experts hadn't been done, you know, early mediation, the lawyer doesn't have to gear up for trial and be ready for trial in order to mediate a case. That just defeats the purpose of an early mediation, which is to save time and expense. To say that a client can sue the lawyer because the value of property in a settlement agreement goes up at some point in the future, that would make the lawyer be an insurer that the client always makes the best deal at mediation. That's the antithesis of the mediation process. It would have a chilling effect on mediation.
Well, it doesn't appear she's trying to gain post-mediation increase in appraised value. It seems like she's trying to argue that the wrong method was allowed to be used by her attorneys.
And it's still something that she knew when she decided to settle. But it's based on a false premise. And the false premise is that tax appraisal values are always below market value and can never evidence market value.
Not in Tarrant County.
That's just false. The court knows that all of the tax protests against TAD aren't filed because the appraised value is below market value. The tax code requires tax appraisals to be based on market value. But as the court knows, opinions about market value can vary greatly. Court sees that in any number of contexts. But it doesn't mean that the tax appraisal values can never evidence market value. And she knew what those numbers were based on. She knew that she didn't like some of the numbers. She negotiated one of them up $100,000. She knew, but voluntarily of her own free act and will, decided to settle. The lawyer ought to be able to rely on the client's voluntary assent to settle a case. If you're going to make the lawyer subject to being sued later on because the value of property goes up, it'll have a chilling effect on the mediation process, especially in divorce cases where property is involved. So the summary judgment was proper, and we would ask that the court affirm the final judgment in all respects.
Mr. Barton, did you talk with her attorney this morning? I think it's Mr. Cook.
No, Your Honor. I have not heard from him and didn't know that he would not be here.
And you had no indication of that?
No, Your Honor. Have had no contact with him.
Well, it's very unprofessional and actually contemptuous. But anyway, thank you.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Barton. Sorry for our delay again.
No.
All right. Well-